Healing Your Inner Child. A web page by Grantley Morris of netburst.net. Part 1. Depending on how much it applies to you personally, what I am about to share could be one of the most important and life-changing things you have ever heard. It could end up answering so many little things about yourself that have always puzzled you, little things that end up being huge. It is explained simply, but it might not start off particularly interesting. Nevertheless, I urge you to persist in listening unless you become absolutely certain that it does not apply to you or to someone important to you. Is anyone so tough or mature or sophisticated as to have never been a child? No matter how much you might hate it, you are human. That makes you an astonishingly complex being. And it means you started off life like all innocent children. Vulnerable, easily scared and overpowered, highly impressionable, gullible, desperate for love and approval, and at the mercy of adults and older children. No matter how deeply buried, and how much you want nothing to do with your past, early memories, emotions, and former ways of viewing life linger on and continue to impact you today, far more than you are likely to realize. Amazingly, the more you have pushed these things out of your mind, the more they affect you. By divorcing yourself from them, you are not allowing your adult understanding to touch that part of you and bring it up to speed with current reality and with your wiser, more mature way of viewing life. So instead of that part of you catching up with the rest of you and no longer holding you back, it remains frozen in time, unable to benefit from all you have learned since. Not connecting with this part of you keeps you from becoming whole. Refusing to get in touch with it means that, instead of being able to benefit from your input, this side of you is forced to hold on to old, childish beliefs, fears, attitudes, and so on. Knowing nothing else, it has no choice but to retain a perspective that is opposed to how the rest of you sees things, thus sabotaging your progress and keeping you clueless as to what is happening. Let's consider a practical example. A child can easily end up riddled with guilt and confusion over involvement in something she has no control over, or even if she were at fault, at that age she might have no understanding of the total forgiveness and cleansing that Jesus brings. If these guilt feelings are unresolved and the cause forgotten, an adult could limp through life, hounded by feelings of defeat, remorse, and inferiority, with no idea why. As eternally significant as divine forgiveness is, in our everyday life, there is an enormous practical difference between the extent of our forgiveness barely registering with us and knowing with every fiber of our being that through the cross all blame has been wiped clean. If only she could revisit the memory, she could reinterpret it from her adult perspective, resolving the guilt feelings and be freed from them by convincing every part of her either that it was false guilt or that all blame has been totally eradicated by Jesus. The only way to move on, totally free, is not by forgetting the past, but by dealing with it, so that it no longer haunts her. We all long to push a distressing experience out of our mind and just get on with life, without mentally coming to terms with it, but this is not nearly as heroic nor as helpful as we would like to think. Denying the reality of an inner wound does not prevent a suppressed part of us from acutely suffering, nor does it stop the pain from spilling over to the rest of our lives, in ways that can make the cause frustratingly hard to identify. Resolving inner pain brings peace. In contrast, the burden of trying to suppress pain is a dead weight, keeping too many of us from the joyous freedom that would otherwise be ours. I challenge you to embrace reality, embarking on a terrifyingly exciting adventure of self-discovery that could lead to more peace and fulfillment than you have ever dared believe possible. If you have inner pain, my heart goes out to you, and I could not bear to make money out of your distress. You can heal. I am determined to share with you everything I know to help bring this about, and without charge. It is up to you, however, to put into studying this at least a fraction of the effort I have poured into producing it. In the past, you might not have had the opportunity to resolve these issues. Desperate times call for desperate measures. If, for example, an emergency were sufficiently serious, you might be desperate enough to sacrifice a limb, cutting it off to save the rest of you. But pain avoidance is not nearly as simple as trying to cut unpleasant memories out of our lives. Consider someone with a seriously wounded leg. Pain in the injured leg might push him to opt for amputation, but after surgery he could be devastated to find the pain continuing in the form of phantom limb pain, in which he suffers pain as if the amputated limb were still there and as wounded as ever. Likewise, cutting ourselves off from painful memories is more drastic than we realize and rarely as effective in ending our distress as we suppose. Such are the mysteries of inner or emotional pain that to deepen our insight it will help to continue to look briefly at physical pain, as this has similarities and is easier to understand. If a gang of thugs kept beating you, it would hurt, of course, but by releasing such chemicals as adrenaline, your brain would temporarily shut down some of your consciousness of pain, thus helping you to flee from your attackers. Running when seriously injured brings great risk of inflaming the injuries, perhaps raising the risk to life-threatening levels, but the temporary necessity of escape overrides other vital concerns. So during the emergency, your mind's partial suppression of your awareness of pain is a precious gift of God. Despite your understandable longing never to feel pain, however, once you are safe, continuing to have little consciousness of pain could be counterproductive. Without pain signaling the extent of your injuries, and hence alerting you to the urgency of seeking medical treatment, your well-being could be seriously impaired. This natural response to physical trauma parallels our natural response to severe inner pain. In the short term, suppressing your inner pain can be a blessing by helping you cope with the necessities of life. For as long as this suppression continues, however, it will keep you from healing. Being human means we have an inbuilt need not merely to store facts, but to process events both mentally and emotionally. That does not necessarily mean crying, but accessing the full range of human emotions and analyzing the experience until we fully come to terms with it, before finally offloading the pain in an emotionally healthy way. When we suffer something highly unpleasant, we long to disconnect from the entire event and live as if it had never happened. But the damage and the need to respond to it in a fully human manner remains a part of us. So, to emotionally disconnect from the event is to disconnect from an essential part of who we are, a part of us that continues to exist and feel and attempts to grapple with the experience in an authentically human way, no matter how much we wish that part of us would die. We either help that part of our humanity find peace, or we keep our lives in needless turmoil. When people have something so horrible in their past that their mind recoils from the very thought of it, we can understand the mind trying to suppress all memory of the event. A simple blocking of the past would not work, however, if a person is continually reminded of it by, for example, having to endure similar trauma every few days. If the trauma keeps recurring every so often, the mind has to employ a more sophisticated approach to maintaining sanity. Even though it knows the situation will return, it needs to give itself a bigger reprieve as possible whenever the trauma is not happening. To achieve this, one's mind must divide itself, so that part of it can function whenever the person is being re-traumatized and another part is kept from awareness of what is happening, so that it is able to function during less traumatic times without being hampered by conscious awareness of the horrors that occurred yesterday and the paralyzing fear that they might recur tomorrow. Additional types of trauma, or trauma multiplying beyond the capacity of one part of the mind to cope, can cause further fragmenting of the mind. That way, no part has to cope with every horrific memory and with the awareness that more such horrors are likely. By this ingenious process, the mind-crippling task of trying to deal with everything at once is broken down into smaller, though still horrific pieces. It is not only memories that are compartmentalized, for a person has to function, often at quite a sophisticated level, while being traumatized. Some intellectual abilities have to be divided up as well. Some abilities can be replicated in another part of the brain, just like right-handed people can develop the side of their brain that controls their left hand so that they can get better at writing with their left hand. Not all abilities are replicated, however. Some parts have abilities that other parts do not have. This means that until they learn about all their other parts, these people are usually more skilled than they realize. That's an exciting discovery awaiting them. Far from being freaks, these people have, from an early age, stumbled upon an ingenious mental strategy for coping with situations that are almost beyond human endurance. As a child's brain grows, it becomes increasingly rigid, and the ability to compartmentalize itself this way is lost, if the process does not begin by around about 7 years of age. If someone learns the technique when young, however, the person can continue further compartmentalizing his or her brain later in life. So, traumatized children, especially those who are creative and/or intelligent, have a remarkable ability. They can suppress inner turmoil by splitting into a highly functional part of them that has little awareness of the extent of their suffering and other parts that are much more aware of what happens out of the public eye. It has been theorized that the split might come about through them trying to cope by intensely imagining that the horrific experience is not happening to them but to someone else. But even babies can split. Because each part of the person grapples alone with a different set of events, each part has a unique awareness of certain emotional pain and hence a distinct consciousness. Many people call these disconnected parts of a person alters. Sometimes they are referred to as insiders. Some people simply use the term parts. I very much like this last term, even though I don't use it much in my web pages because the word is so common that it would not help search engine users find the web page. Alter. Sounds too alien, and even insider. Sounds a little spooky. Part. Helps reinforce that each alter is a part of the one person. Each time a new alter is discovered, it is finding a vital part of oneself that you were not even aware was missing. Alters act like persons within a person. They are part of the full person, although they might not realize it, and they make their own decisions and have feelings, intelligence, and an individual personality. Writes one of Alice's alters to one of Jake's alters, two of my friends who have let me share this with you, names changed to protect anonymity. I want you to know that I respect and admire you for your courage to split off and keep this secret from Jake so that he could survive. What a sacrifice you have made. It is like agreeing to live with a knife in your heart for the sake of the others. The benefit of splitting is that the part of the person not conscious of the worst aspects of the trauma is better able to soldier on with life's daily demands. As we have seen, also applies to a wounded person fleeing an attacker. A lowered consciousness of the severity of the trauma can, in the short term, prove a clever coping mechanism, but there is a serious downside. A part of you could have been so desperate to protect the rest of you by keeping unpleasant feelings and information from you that it severs lines of communication with you. The unintended consequence, however, is that the restricted flow of information operates in both directions. The price of making painful information inaccessible to you is that vital information you discover later in life cannot get back to the hurting part of you. That part of you left to cope alone with the full force of the trauma not only continues to reel in pain, it never gets to move on or grow up. The isolated, hurting part of you remains trapped at approximately the same mental age and limited knowledge, year after year. Usually it cannot benefit from new insights you gain later in life, insights that would otherwise have enabled the hurting part of you to heal. For example, the inner child in an abuse survivor remains unable to see through the abuser's former lies that the adult part of the person can see through. So the damaging power of those haunting lies continues and the person fails to heal. Similarly, the suppressed, hurting part cannot access the spiritual understanding that the person gained later in life. Thankfully, the disconnected part can be taught these liberating, healing truths, but usually this can happen only if that part of the person is acknowledged and dialogue takes place in which these truths are taught, as one would teach anyone else of similar age and experiences. Unless this happens, the deeply hurting, unhealed part will remain with the person for life and make its presence felt in mysteriously vague, unpleasant ways. Sadly, fear of the unknown and false shame make it exceedingly difficult for most people to face the possibility that they have alters. In actual fact, If I learned I had multiple personalities, I'd be excited about it, but that's because I have the advantage of understanding all the benefits flowing from such a discovery. No matter how much you suppress alters and live in denial, if you have alters, they are an inseparable part of you. Keeping them suppressed would sentence you to remaining only a shadow of the wonderful person you could be. Yes, when alters first surface, they have pain and problems, but the key is not to try to rid yourself of these essential parts of you, but to help them heal, and this is fairly easy. Anyone trying to suppress alters is like someone with injured fingers and toes who, instead of tending the wounds, wants to hack off all his arms and legs. Each alter has unique gifts or abilities, such as creativity or a special skill or valuable character trait, or a key to healing that will empower you to soar beyond what you could otherwise achieve. You don't need multiple personalities to have a wounded inner child. A woman, who as far as I know does not have alters, has given me permission to share the following. Just over a year ago, I purchased a Christian CD of baby lullabies and sent it to my new grandson. I kept thinking about that CD. The next time I was in town, I purchased one for myself. I would have never thought of it on my own. I've never known anyone to suggest such a thing. It was a revelation from the Holy Spirit. For weeks that turned into months, I had this music playing softly, while I read my Bible and prayed. I was absolutely amazed at the nurturing and healing that came to me from such music in the background. It was an inexpensive investment that paid big dividends for me. You just might want to give some thought to purchasing a children's Christian CD to see if it doesn't help heal the inner child in you that in childhood was neglected, or at least not supported very well. Sometimes we need to become that little child again before we can move on.